Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats just as I did last night. Met with my good buddy Eric Carabell to see Trevor Plouffe. Got to get quality scouting in there. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
I knew you were in trouble when you phoned in.
Oh my god, I can't wait till Erica.
Shame on me.
I already pressed record.
Yeah.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabell.
All right, welcome. Hello. It's the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. It's Thursday. I am Tristan H. Cockcroft. The H is for happy. Yes. It's not quite officially for happy, but we'll just go with that. Why not? Sounds good. Joining me today is AJ Mass again, our points guru, my friend, my colleague. How you doing, AJ?
I'm doing just fine. The J is for happy. It's just a happy, happy day.
The J is absolutely for happy. That makes complete sense. Total. Yep, that goes with the theme. Yep, we're not off the rails already. We're not singing like crazy or anything like that. But yes, geez, everything to talk about today. Suspensions, injuries, rookies, closers. Oh, my. You know, AJ, we've got to get right to it. Where do we start, right? I'm going to mention that I should always do the intros beforehand. Besides AJ, we have behind the glass, of course, Anthony Kaladiud pressing the buttons. Keith Lipscomb is the editorial watchdog for the day. Keith, can we use that for you, your editorial watchdog sub for the day?
Sounds better than my real title, so go for it.
All right. So for a one-day title, we'll call you that.
Yes, that works.
And, of course, Kyle Soppe doing the great research here. We've got so much to get to. And, you know, AJ, I really hate to start with a suspension here, but I think we need to. I think based on the fact we talk so often about catchers in fantasy baseball, Wellington Castillo, the report is, and we'll find out today the official announcement on this one, but it looks like he's headed for an 80-game suspension for violating the MLB drug policy. This casts the White Sox catching situation in a pretty tough spot, and I think it's something that stands out for fantasy. Just because Castillo was one of the guys that people waited for in ESPN standard leagues. Looking like Omar Narvaez is going to be likely the starter for them, but he might partner with Kevin Smith. He's the other catcher on the 40-man roster, likely will get called up here. But Castillo, AJ, very good numbers when he was on the active roster since the beginning of last year. If you scale him to 162, a 278 hitter, 23 home runs, and in his career per 162, he's a 259 hitter with 22 homers. This really does leave us in a pinch. How would you react here? Anything from the White Sox? Does anyone stand out on the waiver wire?
Yeah, I mean, I was subbing Eric not only on the podcast today, but I also writing the free agent pickups recommendations article that Eric usually does every Thursday. And I had Wellington Castillo right there ready to roll as my catcher pickup. And then this news broke and I had to go scrambling as well. In the very short term, I think you can pick up Francisco Peña of the Cardinals. He's doing a really nice job with Molina out, and Molina's not coming back quite so soon. So he should be able to do a little stopgap filling for you, at least for the next couple of weeks while you try and figure this out. I'm a Mets fan. Devin Mesoraco has done very well since coming over to the team. Certainly someone that you could pick up. He's going to give you some power numbers, strikeouts too, but some power numbers. And, you know, this is catcher. Beggars can't be choosers. And either half of the Braves combination of Suzuki and Flowers, I mean, they're going to split the time 60-40, and you never know who's going to get the 60, but, you know, it's better than zero.
You want to talk about injury frustration here. The Cardinals going to Pena, AJ, as you mentioned. I mean, they've lost three catchers, from my understanding here. One of them was on a foul ball with Jordan Hicks. One of his pitchers got fouled into, I forget who it was even, one of their backup catchers during this game. And actually, I think that might have been Pena, and he stayed in, didn't he?
It might have been, yeah. And then, you know, you got Carson Kelly on the DL.
Kelly, Molina, yeah, it's a mess. Mesoraco was the first one that I had thought of as well, AJ, so I'm glad you mentioned him. Has started 8 of the Mets' 11 games since the trade. The problem is he's hitting 167, so there is going to be some frustration for him. I want to throw you two other names because I like to get into the deeper players for the show here. Obviously, in our game, it's a little easier to fill Castillo's shoes, I think, but in the ones where you're looking for a number two catcher, it's 12-plus teams. Throw you two other names besides Mesoraco. Just give me whether you're yes or no on these. Manny Pena of the Brewers looks like he's the one that they tend to look at as more the starter, but not great numbers.
Yeah, I mean, Pena's going to give you that, you know, when you catch your spot, you're looking for maybe 10 home runs for the season, 15, if you're not looking at one of the guys you drafted like in the first couple of rounds. I think he can give you double digits in home runs for the season, so it's not the worst pick you could come up with, certainly.
I think he's going to be one of the better ones out there. I think he's 97.5% available in ESPN leagues. I mean, obviously, that's going to lean a little bit more towards our standard with one catcher. John Ryan Murphy of the Diamondbacks, homers in two of his past three appearances, the past five Diamondbacks games overall. Hasn't played much to this point, but there is talk that he could get some more starts at catcher based on his pretty decent hitting lately. Your thoughts on Murphy?
I'm not as sold on Murphy. I don't see a lot in the way of power there. You know, obviously catcher, we're not looking for speed. And I just think he's going to strike out too much. Yes, I do think he's played very well of late. He's one of the people I considered for adding in the free agent pickups simply because, you know, you're looking at catcher and he's getting the playing time lately. And it does look, like you said, that he's going to be getting more playing time going forward. I'm just not sold that offensively he's going to be anything big to speak of.
I remember him well from the Yankees days. I'd agree. I think he tends to get a little bit more of a favorable rep than he deserves. He's got a little bit of pop, but I'm thinking that if you pick him up, you're looking for the Sandy Leon kind of lightning in a bottle from a couple years ago, and I don't think there's an awful lot more there. And the ballpark's not quite as favorable as it once was. Shifting to injuries here, one of the bigger ones, right after the other guy who got suspended, Robinson Cano, was lost for 80 games, the man who shifted to second base to replace him lands on the DL in D. Gordon. He has a fractured right big toe. He injured it on May 9th and then aggravated it on Sunday, and the Mariners decided it was better, and I'd agree with them here, that they put their speedster on the DL, let him get to 100% before he comes back. Now, AJ, I want your thoughts on what this means for D. Gordon, because I know there's a big divide between the traditional roto and the points leagues, but how much does this alter his value going forward? Do you think it's a long-term thing? Do you worry he has some issues when he returns?
Well, you know, anytime you're talking about a player who is, his value is primarily tied up in the speed and the solo base numbers. Certainly in rotisserie, that's nearly the full extent of his value. In points leagues, it's a supplemental. He still has to get on base. So I don't think it's quite as tied to it. I think he still has the similar value even if the steals go down. But we are talking about a toe injury. And when you're talking about a toe injury and someone who is relying on speed to get on base, speed on the base path, you know, if we're talking about a guy who can't even go first to third anymore when he comes back, if there's going to be a delay in that, I mean, then the value is definitely going to go way, way down. We have to see how he recovers, how quickly he recovers. I would say if, you know, you give him a week once he's back to kind of get in full swing of things, if you see that he's still kind of favoring a foot or just not running at all, I think then it becomes a very serious issue that you have to deal with sooner rather than later.
I'm bracing for probably 2 to 3 weeks of a full absence from him. I'm not that worried after he returns because I think they are going to wait until he's fully healthy. But, AJ, you're right. The point does remain here that we've got to see what this does to his stolen base potential, at least leading up until the All-Star break, those late June weeks. We'll see. I'm hopeful, and I'm keeping him ranked still pretty well in my top five among second basemen. But then again, that's roto. I wouldn't go anywhere near that in points leagues. By the way, the Mariners here, AJ. I mean, what a mess this lineup. Have they been – I mean – you want to talk about a team that's been getting just destroyed by injuries here. Besides the Cano thing, Mitch Haniger gets a wrist injury the other day. He's day-to-day currently. Nelson Cruz has missed a little bit of time recently due to injury. He's a little nicked up. Gene Segura had a shoulder problem that cost him a couple of games here. I mean, this team has really taken it pretty rough. I mean, what do you think of them as a matchup for opposing pitchers? What do you think is the kind of the impact on the lineup?
Well, I mean, look at the names you just rattled off there as being injured, and you're going to replace him with the likes of Gordon Beckham, who's never really been anything much to speak of. He's had flashes here and there, but overall disappointing. I mean, are you really going to be afraid of a lineup that has to potentially start, John Andreoli and Andrew Romine? I don't think so.
You know, Gordon Beckham roped a really nice line drive down the right field line at a spring training game back in 2009. I mean, I just want to give him some credit there for that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the one guy that I think who they did call in who could get a couple of at-bats here, the problem is he doesn't fit the right positions in the roster, is Daniel Vogelbach. They called him back up just to provide a little bit of depth there. Has some decent pop. You ever been a Vogelbach guy, AJ? I know I've leaned towards the no here because of the big swing and miss for him, but do you think there's anything there?
Well, I mean, we're in the age of the three true outcomes. So, I mean, yes, in the sense that there are so many guys out there who are all or nothing with the home runs or strikeouts. So since he fits in that mold, when he gets hot, I think he's as good as anyone in terms of that. He hasn't quite shown it. But, yeah, I've gone down that road before. And certainly when he gets called up, I notice and I think about it. But I'm a lot more hesitant to pull the trigger now.
Chris Davis lands on the DL with the grade 1 groin strain. We could have seen this one coming. It was a pretty serious injury if you watch the replay of that. Definitely going to miss at least the minimum time here. We'll see whether it's an extended absence or not. But in the meantime, it does open up a spot in the A's lineup, and it kind of creates a big hole. He's one of their big power potential players, and there is a lot of swing and miss in this lineup, himself included. Chad Pinder getting the start in left field in the most recent game there, but I do think they're going to mix and match. They do traditionally do that with the A's. Is there anybody in particular you think who benefits?
I mean, I think Jed Lowry benefits in the sense that he can now slide into the DH role and kind of get that mini day off that he probably wouldn't have gotten otherwise. So I think that's good news for someone who's in his mid-30s, and that's certainly going to help keep his bat fresher longer. Not that Franklin Barreto is someone I'm rushing to go out and pick up, but he can play second base and free that spot up for him. Other than that, I think it's business as usual for this team. The platoonish type players are still going to be platooning.
I'd agree with you. I mentioned Pinder just because he's a guy who fascinates me, what he did last year with the whole trying to elevate the launch angle. I wish I could see him get a little bit more expanded opportunity just to see kind of what he is. It's not so much that I think he's a guy to pick up and get excited about, but I think there could be something there if we got some extended exposure for a regular gig. We'll see. I don't know. Not totally optimistic about that one. Let's shift to the rookies here. There are some pretty exciting names in the news, and I'll be a homer. Gleyber Torres. He's kind of good, isn't he? The Yankees are going on this unbelievable home run barrage, and he is a large part of it. He's got 5 homers over his past 5 games, as Kyle points out here, with 10 RBI. He leads the majors with 4 since our last show. Unbelievable. I mean, the guy, he's got homers in 3 straight games as well. I mean, granted, Texas, but Gleyber Torres, let's evaluate him. What do you think, AJ? Where does he belong in the ranks now?
Well, we're dealing with all these rookies coming up, and they're... There's varying degrees of how soon you buy in on these guys. Certainly, they're all coming in with similar types of hype, from your Sotos, from your O'Neills, from your Meadows. I mean, all these guys are like, fans are excited to see them. And the thing with Torres is that he's now put up a much larger sample size than any of these other guys. And so I kind of think you have to buy in on it. I don't think that the power numbers will necessarily... becoming as frequent as they have of late. But the fact that he's doing this on the road and not taking advantage of any Yankee Stadium home run inflation, these are road games. So I think that adds even more credence to the power numbers, don't you think?
I think it does. I mean, in this particular case, the fact he exploited another favorable home run ballpark makes me think, okay, I don't want to get ahead of myself. I'm sort of pumping the brakes a little bit on Gleyber Torres just because I agree with you, AJ. I don't think that he's a natural 30-homer power guy yet. I'm impressed by what I've seen. I thought he was a 12-homer type of guy if he played the entire season. I'd upgrade that now to the 20 to 25 range. Most of the underlying metrics don't support him being that elite power guy just yet. His chase rate's a little bit high for my taste, so I think there's going to be some slumps in there. It's a little bit, roughly about 5% over the major league average, the chase rate, the swings at the non-strikes. But this is interesting. He's the number 26 player on the player radar among middle infielders, despite being active for only 60% of the schedule. And yesterday we all talked about, AJ, you included, you, I, and Kyle did, Marcus Semien. We discussed his value. And the first guy I thought of when we were writing that was Gleyber Torres, that I would rather have him than Semien just because I think he gives you a little bit more pop and you're going for the upside. He's 9 spots behind Semien for the year despite that little playing time.
Well, I mean, the middle infield, shortstop in particular, is loaded. As we were talking about Semien and, again, in his relationship to shortstops. I mean, obviously Torres is playing second base, but, you know, we're talking about a really quality, almost a renaissance at the position. And, you know, we haven't even begun to talk about people like Brandon Crawford, who was like 16th on the player radar, and is batting like 300 and can easily like get into the top 10 on a normal season. But there's just so much value here that it almost behooves you to have an extra middle infielder as your utility man these days because of all these strikeouts that are going on, certainly in points leagues.
Brandon Crawford, of course, with a 379 BABIP. So do you believe that 310 is sustainable?
I believe 290 is sustainable. I believe okay. that the BABIP is high for him, but it's not, the relationship between that and his batting average is not out of line with his career numbers. And so even if it drops down, which it will, I think we're only looking at a 290 here. So and that's not bad.
Based on the batted ball metrics, I could get behind 290. I probably would project something lower just because I lean more on the three-year averages. But to your point, 28% line drive rate. I don't think that's sustainable either, but it's clearly higher, and he's getting a little bit better quality of contact. So glad Crawford gets his name mentioned on here. A couple of the rookies I want to get to. Willy Adames of the Rays getting called up here, and it's a lot of good and bad with him. Homered off Chris Sale in his second at bat, but he has 10 swings and misses in the 2 games he's played. Only 3 players have had more in the past 2 days combined, and he has 6 strikeouts in those games. Kind of decent at AAA, 311, 387, and 466 in 40 games. But Adames, who doesn't necessarily look to be here for good because he's up for Joey Wendell's paternity leave, do you think there's anything here, AJ, even if it's from kind of like a stash and later this year perspective?
Well, again, this year, no, but only because, like I said, we have so many options at these positions that I don't think you have to waste a roster spot on a stash here. But he will get another chance because that's pretty much what the Rays do. I mean, Joey Wendell gets hot and suddenly he's a big pickup. And then, you know, he gets cold and suddenly you have other people coming up and stepping up. I mean, this guy Johnny Field is playing way over his head, but you know, with Kiermaier out, there's room for him with Gomez out. You know, both of them, he's got a hot streak now. He's a top free agent pickup. I think the Rays are always going to have those one or two guys that you can pick up for when they get hot for those 1 or 2 weeks. And, you know, I like to have, I mean, Leo's not here to talk about the Rays, but I like to have a Ray spot on my team and just rotate in the hot Ray because there always seems to be one.
There's always opportunity with them. So, you know, since Leo's not here, we're going to bring in our resident Rays fan, Keith, to give some perspective on the Rays, all those games that he watches there. Keith, right? He's great, isn't he?
You know, I'm a big Rays guy, and I just want to let you know that I'm also very very jaded. This is my Leo impersonation. And I just want to see...
Speaking of Rays, Keith, give yourself a raise.
Hey, I'll take that. I just want to see Tyler Chatwood traded to the Rays, please.
Don't forget Lance McCullers Jr. This show wouldn't be good without him.
I think it's a little bit more realistic here. Let's face it. The way Chatwood's pitching, anybody, I think there's a much better chance he gets shipped to the Rays than McCullers.
So. Let's just trade everybody to the Rays. I mean, you know, they probably could use it here. Why not? Why not?
Yeah.
Let's go from Florida up to the Midwest here and focus on the Cardinals outfield. There's a rookie there named Tyler O'Neill who's been pretty good, AJ. 3 homers in a row from May 19th to 21st. He's hit safely in 6 in a row since his recall. Of course, yesterday he subbed for the tardy Marcell Ozuna, so he wasn't necessarily going to start, then did at the last minute. But, you know, in his minor league career, he's whiffed about 28% of the time, and we don't know about the playing time. So, what do you think here, AJ?
Well, I think Tyler O'Neill is going to have to take a backseat to the other guys. He's going to get his at bats where he can, and certainly it helps to have, you know, a guy over sleep. I wouldn't sleep on Tyler O'Neill, but I wouldn't rush out to get him. I think of the guys who are in this kind of rookie class we got going on here between Soto and O'Neill and Meadows, I would put him third amongst those three. But Soto, I mean, is already pretty much gone in two thirds of leagues. So you might, he's a nice consolation prize, you know? But I don't necessarily think that he's here to stay this time around on the Cardinals. And that's my concern.
I agree with that. I think it's tough. And I've said this so many times, they have a glut of outfielders. But the other thing I want to draw into this discussion is Tommy Pham. AJ, I don't know if you've seen this lately. Kyle, maybe you've seen this. I'm not sure how much you guys have tracked it here, but three straight hitless games. He looked pretty bad in these two. 0 for 13 with 9 Ks. And not only that, he's whiffed 21 times in his past 42 at-bats in his past 10 games. And that's alarming because it reminds me of that year in 2016 where he had a lot of trouble seeing the ball properly. We've talked about his vision many times on this show. You think there's something up here?
Well, and that's the big thing, isn't it? I mean, we're talking about someone who has a history of vision problems, and he says that it was corrected, and it did for a good portion of this season seem like it was corrected. Certainly the KBB rate is much better this season for him, but I don't know if it's something where if it is physical and not just a cold streak that every batter goes through, and it is something with his vision, that's really bad news. That is not something that's going to suddenly, you know, bounce back in a week or two. That's something that's going to probably affect on the rest of the season. So I hope it's just one of these temporary slumps and not the physical thing.
I hope so, too. I think it definitely has to be mentioned, the risk of this being an issue long term. At the same time, I'll pump the brakes on this one and remind that he also had this question come up around the end of spring training where he wasn't hitting for a week's time and then all of a sudden went on this monstrous tear. So what I do wonder is maybe this thing just makes the guy a very streaky player like the three true outcomes types we mentioned before. Maybe he has a hot streak coming and it's the time to buy in. I like Pham a lot. I think he is a dynamic player. He's a borderline superstar, especially for fantasy. I really hope that this gets straightened out, but it's caught my eye here. I mean, they do have options to spot in and maybe shuffle him off to the DL for a bit if they need that. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about it is, you know, you're talking about a guy who's gone, you know, 1 for 18, you know, or something like that over the last four games. And yet he's still batting .293. So it's not like we're talking about a player who has a slump like that and, you know, is now batting .243. There's certainly plenty of room for rebound, and everybody has these cold streaks at some point. So if it's not something that's physical and it is just a temporary lull, then he'll bounce back and he'll be a 300 hitter.
So in a moment, we'll ride the closer carousel. But first, another reminder that 30 for 30 Podcast Season 3 is now available. This season takes you deep into the complicated world of Bikram yoga. Its founder used connections with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, John McEnroe, and other stars to spread his hot, aggressive yoga to the world. But Bikram's guru status enabled increasingly dark behavior. It's a story you have to hear to believe. Subscribe and listen right now to 30 for 30 Podcasts in the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, or wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Now, let's ride.
The Closer Carousel.
So much to do here, AJ. We got to start with the Reds, though. Raisel Iglesias on the DL, 10-day for a strained left biceps. Key because he's a right-handed pitcher, strained left biceps. He blew a save Sunday and said after that he didn't think he could continue pitching through this. But at the time, before that, 9 straight scoreless, walkless appearances, and he's RP16 on the player rater for the year. They're going to go with a closer by committee, from my understanding, AJ. Is there anyone you're interested in from that group?
Well, you know, first of all, we are talking about a team that might not get a lot of safe chances. Over the course of the season, we think, you know, don't pay for saves, but every team is going to get the chances. However, when we're talking a short term, what we hope will be short term, not necessarily going to have a lot of opportunities there. So Jared Hughes maybe is someone I might be considering, but I'm probably looking for other teams and other situations if I can.
I would try to as well. Hughes is kind of interesting in the deeper leagues, though. Has pitched well lately, so keep an eye on that one. The other is Amir Garrett. I wrote a piece earlier this week about the multi-inning relief pitchers. He's one who's been performing very well in a long relief role, so I don't think there's necessarily saves for him unless they're matchups related or like Josh Hader's, but I've got my eye on Amir Garrett from that bullpen from a broad perspective of fantasy value. Two pitchers pitching, well, actually, I'll go with three pitchers here who are pitching extremely well. We'll start with the Edwin Diaz one. He's number one on the player rater. And AJ, he's got paces for the year of 57 saves and 152 Ks. You know, only two guys in history have ever had 40 and 120 plus in those two categories. Eric Gagne in 2003 and Craig Kimbrell in 2011. Were we kind of wrong in Edwin Diaz? Does he belong up here in the top tier?
Oh, he definitely belongs up there in the top tier. I think I've been higher on him than most when we were doing the ranks preseason and everything. I had him in my top five tier there, but it was at the bottom. Maybe we should have put him at the top. But, yeah, definitely I think he's worthy of the spot. The K9 rate is outstanding and should continue to be so. So, Mike, if I have a concern, it's that he is still a little bit susceptible to the long ball more than other closers, but if he can keep that in check, then there's no reason why he can't finish certainly in the top three in the player rater amongst relievers.
He's got an excellent shot. I have him fourth in my rankings, and I wouldn't quibble over putting him at three. Is he up with the top two guys? I'm not sure. And as a matter of fact, that's a good question, AJ. Is Kenley Jansen back? Simple as that.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's no reason not to think that he's back. I didn't really think he left so much as he just had a bad start to the season. And I've been fully behind him pretty much all the way. And now that the Dodgers, if the Dodgers have been winning to a greater extent, he'd have better stats. And then it's really just the fact that they hadn't been winning. And yes, he was a part of that the first week. But with their pitching staff and their starting pitching staff, it's kind of hard to blame the lack of saves at this point on Kenley.
If we want to raise the velocity question, that's really not an issue anymore. He's averaged 93 miles per hour with the cutter for his career, and it's 92.7 since April 21st. Excuse me, past 14 appearances, 8-for-8 in saves and 0.6 ERA. I agree. I think he's back. Corey Knebel too. I wonder whether he's back as well. Five straight scoreless outings since the return from the DL after the first game where he gave up the Francisco Lindor home run. We'll forgive him that. Saves on back-to-back days, Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah, I think, you know, you worry about a guy coming off an injury when there's somebody there who could easily step into the role, and this is not an issue, as it turns out. Knebel's done the job, so he really has nothing to worry about you know, perhaps a Hader takeover.
Nate Jones of the White Sox has converted three straight save chances. Jace Fry did have one, a situational one in between those, but Nate Jones has three in a row. He's had a couple of down outings, and it does look like the White Sox have leaned the majority towards him. What do you think of Nate Jones as a potential pickup, or if you have him, your thoughts?
I definitely think he's a pickup for now because, let's face it, he is one of the biggest potential trade things that can leave out there, the White Sox. They can definitely dangle him and say, all right, let's go. And by having him in the closer role, those save numbers will go up, and they don't have to turn to Rondon or Fry just yet. They can just leave Jones in there and build his value. I think when you get towards that trade deadline, he's probably going to go somewhere. At that point, his role will probably change, and he'll be the setup guy as opposed to the closer in the situation that he goes to. And at that point, as you get closer to the deadline, then you want to pick up one of these other guys. But for now, I think Jones will probably stay in the role as long as he doesn't stink it up too much like as if he were Soria.
You know, that's a good point about the trade possibility with him. He's got three option years coming up after this, but he's affordable. And you're right, he would have been a free agent if he didn't have those three options. I wonder, yeah, that could be something. Maybe there's something to him getting a couple of saves, and I do like the strikeout potential. Zach Britton is on the mend. It's looking like he's edging a little bit closer towards returning. It could happen sometime within the next month. I do believe he's in the midst of throwing at this stage. Do you think Zach Britton belongs on an ESPN standard team? We'll go with just that because of the one DL spot. At what point is it time to pounce with Zach Britton?
Well, I always like to say, 1 week sooner than everybody else. That's all you really need. So I would say if you are hearing about this now that he's coming close, then now's the time to pick him up if you're going to stash him, because by the time that word gets around to other people, you've already missed him.
The rehab stint begins May 30th with AAA Norfolk, so we'll see how many outings he needs. I would imagine it's going to be at least a week's time, maybe more than that. He might be worked back in slowly, like Corey Knebel. But yeah, I think based on the fact we're hearing news and a more definitive timetable, yeah, you're right. I think there's something coming here. The Blue Jays, let's focus on that one finally. Tyler Clippard, he's gotten four save opportunities in a row for them as the fill-in for Roberto Osuna, but he's blown two of them lately. So where do you think the Blue Jays are going with their next save chance?
Well, I mean, if it's not workload related, then I still think it's Clippard, but I take your point very well there, that there really isn't someone who can just come on in there. They don't have someone who is going to replace Osuna. He's not replaceable at that quality. So you go with the guy who is more of a veteran, and that's Clippard. I don't really think that you're going to go to anyone else there. There's no one there that like screams, "I'm a closer, put me in."
They do have a couple guys with experience there, but I'm not excited either, and I don't know what the Osuna timetable is. We'll see. They keep pushing back this the administrative leave he's on, extending that. The Blue Jays' bullpen is becoming a lot too uncertain for me. I really thought it was Clippard based on the good performance, but lately I've had my doubts. We'll see. Let's do a quick stroll through the schedule since it's a busy Memorial Day weekend, beginning with Thursday's game, where on ESPN Plus we'll have the Mariners at the Athletics. Right now we've got Felix Hernandez facing Josh Lucas in what's a bullpen day for the Oakland A's. But Felix Hernandez here, you think there's anything to him? Do you think he's even a matchups guy anymore?
No. Not really. I just don't think you can trust it. I think the rain is over. It is a short schedule, so I understand that if you don't have one of the bigger names going today, like your Charlie Morton, and the fact that Charlie Morton is one of the bigger names going today says a lot about the day. Even though he's done well, he's still Charlie Morton.
It's gonna be a good game to watch. Yeah, that Astros needs.
There's not a lot on the schedule today, but I'm fine with like just tapping out for a day and not necessarily taking a risk.
Luis Castillo faces the Pirates in a home game. The ballpark is less favorable than it would be in Pittsburgh. He had the five walks in five innings the last time, but it's been pretty good lately. Kyle notes here, 7.23 ERA in April and a 2.78 in May. I've said before, I'm all in on Luis Castillo. I do think that he's fixed a lot of the issues, but would you start him here, and what's your confidence level going forward?
I definitely have a strong confidence level going forward. He was one of those guys who I kept putting on my sleeper list at the beginning of the year. I thought there was definitely enough there to merit picking him late in drafts. And, yeah, he's gotten over that first month slump. He's performing a lot better of late. And I'm the type of person who's willing to, if I see consistency from a certain point on, to forget what came before, especially early in the season. It's what have you done for me lately in a lot. And we've seen that he's capable of doing a lot of really good things. The walks last game are scary, but I'm willing to take a chance with him in terms of long term. I might not start him today, though.
Yeah, I think that they're a little uncharacteristic for him. I think it is a good buy-in opportunity for him, even after this game. It's an early one for the start there, so definitely see if he is available by trade. Friday on ESPN Plus, we have the Mets at the Brewers, and yeah, we've got Noah Syndergaard pitching against Junior Guerra, who's actually been kind of good. AJ, I've brought this up before, that the Mets are an extremely favorable matchup so far for opposing pitchers. It is in Milwaukee. That's a little bit more of a hitter's park. Junior Guerra of any interest?
I'm a Mets fan, so I'm going to say absolutely not. Stay away from them. The Mets are great. I'd be lying. I do think the Mets are definitely one of these teams that if they don't hit home runs, they don't score. They're not very much one of these station-to-station type teams. And that's kind of where it's been for them. So in terms of Guerra, what's his fly ball rate been like lately? That's what I would check on him. And if he's been throwing a few more fly balls late, I'd probably steer clear. He does have one of the higher home runs per nine in the field of pitchers around him on my ranking, so I would probably avoid him simply because the Mets are a team that can take advantage of fly balls that seem to sail over the park.
Jesus Aguiar has 5 homers and 12 RBI, as Kyle points out, in Aguiar's past 9 games. I don't think either of us would use him for the Syndergaard game, but I bring this up because the Mets do have him sandwiched by 2 left-handed pitchers, Steven Matz and Jason Vargas, and then they have Zach Wheeler pitching on Monday, and again, it is in that favorable Miller Park. It's an extremely favorable hitter's park, in fact, and Aguiar, I think, has shown me in the past he can hit right-handed pitchers. What do you think about Aguiar's chances, not only this weekend, but going forward?
Well, he's done a lot to earn the playing time. I mean, he's supposed to just be filling in for Eric Thames while his thumb is all achy. I think he keeps the job when Thames is ready to come back. I think at least a timeshare and probably more of it. I mean, he's not hitting .378 for the season like he was doing in April, but there's nothing wrong with .288. That's pretty darn good, and the power should come.
I certainly hope they do play him. At the very least, he's a matchups guy, but I think there's something there. I felt there was something there in the preseason. They just got to find a spot. Clayton Richard pitches here. He's gone at least 7 innings in each of the past 3 starts. Would you start him? Any chance you would do so in L.A. against the Dodgers?
Well, I'm not totally afraid of the Dodgers. I'm not afraid of any matchup, really. It's more in the ballpark that affect me. But in terms of Clayton Richard, I've been burned by him so many times in the past. He seems to be one of these pitchers like Jose Quintana, who whenever I decide I'm buying in, he suddenly becomes the worst pitcher in baseball. So I'm not starting him, but I do see a lot of potential for him, at least to throw a quality start here. I don't think he's going to be throwing any shutouts, but I could see you getting 6 1/3 and 3 runs allowed out of him with maybe 5-6 strikeouts.
I kind of like that projection. I maybe not with the strikeouts, but I like the idea of meeting the quality start minimum. So, yeah, I'm leaning a little bit more towards a yes on that. Saturday, we have on ESPN Plus the Twins at the Mariners. This will be Jake Odorizzi against Wade LeBlanc. Odorizzi could be an interesting guy, especially since we mentioned before about the injuries going on with the Mariners. So check that lineup. Jake Odorizzi has a 3.17 ERA, but the FIP doesn't support it necessarily. It's 4.81, so a little bit of question there. There's a few other interesting names here that are pitching on Saturday. I want to bring up Jack Flaherty gets his next outing in Pittsburgh. Lance McCullers Jr. faces or goes up against the Cleveland Indians. And of course, big Lance McCullers Jr. fan Keith, is, I'm sure, rooting for him in this game. I'm absolutely positive he wants a Lance McCullers win in this game, correct?
Come on now, you know better than that. This is where I'm going to have to draw the line.
McCullers.
I draw the line.
You know exactly why.
I know why. This is a really good game, though. McCullers versus Carrasco.
It is a great game. I'm looking forward to watching it.
That'll be a good one. Would you start Jordan Lyles in L.A.?
Who are you asking, me or Leo?
I'm asking the field. Not the Johnny field.
How about anybody except for Jordan Lyles?
Wow. Okay. All right. Tyler Mahle in Colorado then. Okay. Done. Sold. Why not?
Okay. Maybe not everybody.
We found our limits.
Yes,
all right. Great. Sunday on ESPN Plus, we've got the Mets at the Brewers. This is Zach Wheeler, I mentioned before, against Jolys Chacín, one of my favorite names to pronounce. Chacín's pitched pretty decently lately. 11 hits allowed in 23 1/3. Man, Kyle, is that right? 11 hits in 23 1/3 innings? On Sunday Night Baseball at ESPN2, we've got the Giants at the Cubs. Ty Block versus Yu Darvish. Yu Darvish having a bit of a struggling year. AJ, the Giants have been very up and down as an offense, but lately up and kind of scary as a matchup, and it's in Wrigley, which is the worst of the ballpark factors here. Would you start Yu Darvish?
Would I start Yu Darvish? I'm going to wait until I see Yu Darvish get through a game without walking like 3 or 4 hitters. He's putting on too many base runners, and everyone's pointed to the fact that he's not giving up a lot of hits, but the base runners are still there. That's my issue with him, is that I don't care how the base runners get on base. It's just they're getting on base, and there's a lot I still need to see from him before I'm going to trust him.
Now I'm going to throw everybody one pick here. You get to pick one guy as you try to fill your stats on Sunday. You can have Kevin Gausman at the Rays. I know
you
where Keith's going with that.
Gausman. You can't quit Gausman.
Nick Pivetta. I know I can. Nick Pivetta versus the Blue Jays in Philly or Miles Michaelis in Pittsburgh.
M&M.
M&M for Kyle.
Yes,
all right.
Sir.
Who else we got?
I'll go with Pivetta.
Okay. All right. Keith, who's your guy?
Well, I'm definitely, I mean, I could just be Leo and just say, I'll take Gausman every time he starts.
Oh, against your own Rays.
But I actually don't agree with that. I would actually go Pivetta.
I think I'd go Michaelis, Pivetta, and Gausman on this one.
I mean,
but,
Michaelis, I think, has the safest floor.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's been really good with that curveball lately. He's been good. It's a little bit of a scary matchup. Pittsburgh's been hitting at times this year, but I'm with you on that one. Today's Hash Browns are brought to you by Hims. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. Thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. Why do guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing when they can turn to medicine and...
science!
For Hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and other wellness supplements for men. Thanks to...
science!
Baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. Prescription solutions backed by...
science!
No waiting room, no awkward doctor visits. Save hours by going to forhims.com. So easy. Answer a few quick questions. Doctor will review and can prescribe you. Products are shipped directly to your door. Order now. My listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to forhims.com/FFB. That's forhims.com/FFB. forhims.com/FFB.
I don't want to say this that was the greatest live read of all time, but it was definitely up there.
Well, this doesn't sound like Thomas Dolby anymore.
Oh, yes, it doesn't.
Although I will say, I appreciate you guys knowing that my 30th high school reunion is coming up, and as a graduate of the Bronx High School of Science, and that being my high school unofficial theme song, thank you so much. I feel quite at home.
Excellent. All right, let's blind everyone with hash browns.
Blinding hash browns. You got it. We got a lot of dynasty questions coming this way. Cam specifically is worried about Vlad Jr. He's got him stashed in a keeper league, and he's suddenly getting a ton of offers. He wants to know what players are generally in his tier in a keeper format.
You really couldn't come up with a broader answer here, I don't think. I mean, it depends on the keeper context of your league. If you're in a league where you keep five players, I'm not sure you can make the case to even keep him next year. I think that certainly based on the upside and the excitement surrounding him and the great numbers in the minors, maybe, yeah. But I wouldn't be able to tell you what the value point is for this player. So I'm going to assume something like the standard keep 100, maybe keep 125 overall players. I frankly think he's the equivalent of a non-keeper-worthy rental top 50 overall player. We're talking about an older player. Maybe not Nelson Cruz, because I worry a little bit about the age, the injuries we mentioned before. But I think you're demanding at least that, or multiple players like that. You're trying to get key rental pieces to go for it now. AJ?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a perfect example of why one of the things I like to do when I'm in Fantasy League, Dynasty League, is to have like two minor league spots that you can just stash these guys and keep the minor league guys until they make their debut, so that you don't have to worry about this. And you can keep a Vlad going forward, or my personal favorite, Bo Bichette. But you know, I think that allows you to keep these guys and not to worry about protecting them year after year, because you're right, until they make their debut, there's really no point in keeping them on your roster year over year, because they're not going to play, and keeping a zero spot doesn't make sense to me.
The two reference points I've had, and I've mentioned them on the show before, in this league I have like this, was Justin Upton, when he was in the minors, didn't know the ETA, I traded him for Jason Bay. Bay's value point was about where Nelson Cruz's is today, and frankly, I think Vlad is better than Upton was at the time. The other is Robinson Cano, who was unkeepable based on price, for Trey Turner at the time when Turner was pretty far away from reaching the major leagues. You are looking for a pretty big impact guy, I think.
Well, you know, not necessarily an impact guy. If, you know, it's too soon to make that trade, I think, just in general, because he's going to keep his value going forward. He's not going to lose any value unless he gets injured. And, well, that could happen to anybody. But I would say that you want to hold off if you're playing in a roto league and you know you're coming up to the trade deadline and you need 10 stolen bases, then just trading him for anyone who's going to give you those stolen bases, that makes it a worthwhile trade because you can win this year with it. If you're not going to win this year at that point, you then keep him. Like, I think just wait on him because his value is not going down.
All right, we'll shift to the pitching side of things. Dennis is curious about Alex Reyes. He's nearing his 2018 debut. He wants to know what kind of value you think he holds both this year and moving forward.
Yeah, I saved this one here because I'm excited by the Alex Reyes news. The fact that the Cardinals are talking like he's going to go straight into the rotation. Why wouldn't he? I mean, he's been very good during his rehab stints. Granted, I mean, the level of competition is quite the same. Not quite the same. He's pitched in high A. Actually, I think he's pitched in low A, high A, and double A, but not in triple A. Obviously not in triple A or the majors. But tons of strikeouts. Let's see, what do we got? We've got 16 innings and 31 strikeouts. I hear that's good, eh, Jerry?
Yeah, it's good. And the thing that happened when he came, when he first started, he would start as reliever when he came up, but when they finally moved him into the rotation, he was getting a ton of swinging strikes. And that is what was so impressive about him. Assuming that he makes that first start and you see the swing and the miss, then he should be fine. I would certainly, you know, I know people ask about waiver priority. Should I use my number one on him? Like, yeah, I would. It's worth the gamble because he can be so dominant. I don't necessarily think that he's a lock to pitch deep into September. There is a chance, just because of you know, coming back from the injury, there's a chance that he could very well be on that dreaded innings cap. But while he's there, I think he should be lights out. The way they're talking about him and the way he's performed, I'm excited as well.
I think he absolutely will be on an innings cap. I mean, that's what the Cardinals do. They've done it for years. They've shown it with almost every young pitcher they've had.
Oh, and there's no reason not to. Yeah, absolutely.
It makes total sense.
Yeah.
And I think what will happen is they give him a certain number of starts, and no matter how good he is, they try and prep him for, if they're playoff hopeful, for a relief role, which, okay, that's fine. That'll help keep his innings a little bit more in check. But I love what he can possibly give you, even if it's 10, 15 starts.
Yeah, and on top of that, the fact that Flaherty has done so well for the Cardinals gives them the option to, instead of sending him down to the minors, is to actually keep him up and use like an extended rotation, kind of the anti-Tampa Bay rotation, and it just push, you know, give him an extra day of rest, Reyes, an extra day of rest every time.
Ooh, I love it. Go with the Rays like rotation there. Keith will love that one, of course. I see that Rays jersey you got going on there.
Yeah, I'm a fan of two-man rotation.
That's kind of what they have now with Jake Faria on the DL.
That's exactly what they have right now.
They're talking about using Sergio Romo all three games this weekend, starting him.
That's outstanding.
And I believe it. I
do
think
too.
He will.
I do too.
Or he'll at least pitch, you know, two out of the three. AJ, where do you have AJ? Where do you have AJ Reyes? Where do you have Alex Reyes ranked in the points right now?
Well, you know, it's because of the cap. I have him, you know, way down. I think he's out of my top 100 in pitchers, but that's just because of the innings. In terms of long term for the rest of the season, on a per game basis, however, I think he's got the potential to be definitely top 25 to 30. If those strikeouts are coming, I'm just concerned about how many innings you're going to get out of him.
I like it. Based on the difference in the games here, I totally understand that he's less valuable, I think, in points leagues too. My 64th starter in the head-to-head categories, Roto. I like this guy a lot. And frankly, I think as a keeper right now, I think he has top 30, genuine top 30 starter potential today.
Alrighty. Like that. If you had to rank the young Cardinal, I don't want to say aces, but promising pitchers, how are you ranking them? Let's say through next season.
Oh, dude, this is what Eric just did to me. We're sitting here watching a lot of great Trevor Plouffe in AAA. I got to bring that guy's name on the show because I love Trevor Plouffe. He asked me the same question, like, where would you rank them in Dynasty? Where would you rank them this year? They're pretty close. AJ, where would you rank them? And then I'll give mine.
I mean, just in terms of potential, Reyes is the best of the bunch. But the innings is going to be the issue again with him. So I probably go Flaherty above him by a little bit, and Mikolas ahead of the pack there. But, I mean, it's been about splitting hairs here in terms of if you include next year as well.
See, for this year, I probably am still going with Weaver first, and that's just me. I just like the guy, and I think the underlying numbers back it up. I probably go Weaver, Michaelis, Flaherty, Reyes, Waka.
Oh, I wasn't even including Weaver because I think Weaver's top 25. So I get that.
Okay.
I wasn't including him in the tier. He's out of that tier.
Dynasty, where do you have those five guys? I'd assume we have Carlos Martinez first of this bunch too for Dynasty.
I think Martinez is first, Weaver second. I would put Reyes third. Then flip the coin between the other two.
Let's see. What would I can make the case for Reyes over Weaver, but I think Weaver with the workload currently, I think I'd still have him ahead of Reyes. It's very close. Flaherty, very close.
I need to see at least one or two starts. I mean, strikes out 10 in his first game, then yeah, he starts to jump, obviously. And I know I don't like to overreact to one outing, but in this case, we were talking about coming back from a major injury. So
right.
In those situations, you do learn a lot from one game.
All right, let's keep it in the Central. Me and Sarah Jane, loyal listener.
He had a special thing going.
How about it? Says it's been a bumpy ride with Jose Quintana this year. Three starts where he's carried a shutout through six innings. Three starts where he's given up at least six earned runs. Is he strictly a matchup player, or do you think he stabilizes like what we've seen in the past?
So, two things stood out to me with Quintana this year. And one is that his characteristically good first pitch strike rate is down. That's actually one of his biggest strengths. He gets ahead in the count, very good with the control there, especially on first pitch. 63% this year, 66% for his career, but it was usually 67 to 69% during his best White Sox years. The other is the velocity of the fastball. That was down. And AJ, I'll look this up while I throw to you for a second, but it was down recently. I want to see whether it was in the last start, because if it is, that's why I moved him down on my rankings. I thought he was a top 25 potential starter, and if it's lower, I think he's barely top 40, and you can make the case he doesn't belong there.
I currently have him at the tail end of my top 40 starters, so, you know, he's asking will he stabilize with time? This is Quintana stabilize. Good starts, really good starts, and then really bad starts. I mean, if you look last year at his game score totals, he had six games above 70, and he had seven games below 40. That's what he is. He's really good, and then he's really bad, and there's no rhyme or reason to it.
92.7 mile per hour average velocity in that last outing, the great one against the Reds. Now, this drives me crazy. This is like the Dylan Bundy thing. AJ, I don't know if you'd heard this one, where we were talking about Bundy's horrible first inning, and then he tosses a gem his next one. This drives me crazy when pitchers do this, and that's Quintana. The fastball velocity, of course, was up this game. Go figure.
Yeah, but that like you said, I mentioned him earlier as one of these guys when we were talking about Clayton Richard. Like, I just, whenever I go with him, he falls apart. So I am not going with him this next few starts, so I'm sure he'll be a Cy Young winner level pitcher because I don't have him.
So we got any more?
We've got one more for you. Kind of maybe not a pitcher with as much pedigree, but Zach Godley's falling apart right now. 5.27 ERA in May with 18 walks and 5 starts. Ryan wants you to make the case for not cutting him.
The case for not cutting him.
You really enjoy losing?
Ouch.
Sold. There's your case. Good enough for me.
I was watching his outing against the Brewers, and I saw a pitcher who had no idea what he was doing. It was painful to watch. I was surprised he lasted as long as he did. It was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. There are times when you see a pitcher who's just getting unlucky, and you know the ground balls are trickling through. He would release the ball and had no idea where it was going, and that's just scary. Very scary to see that.
Godley's a guy I've got in a sim league, so I break this guy down a lot, and walks have been historically an issue for him. They were really on point last year. This year, they've sort of fallen apart, and he goes very heavily for the double plays, which neutralizes that. But this is an issue. He's not controlling the strike zone in any way now. And the first pitch strike rate I mentioned a minute ago is below 60. That's the danger zone. I can't deal with a guy like this. Nobody's swinging at his non-strikes. They know when to take. I want to believe based on the natural talent, but AJ, I think I lean with you. I think he's a streamer guy in ESPN leagues.
If
he could rebound and then pick him up, but I do think that the cutting is in the cards. Anyway, hey Kyle, what day are you celebrating today?
Today would be a National Scavenger Hunt Day.
Ooh, I love those.
Yeah, no, everybody likes those. They're not just for little kids. Like, I was told that they were only like for Easter and stuff like that, but a good scavenger hunt any day of the year.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm always in for that. Yeah, we'll have to go into overtime and do one of those. We'll save one for another show, I suppose. Anyway, thank you, AJ Mass, of course, for joining me today. Great work as always. And when's your next points league ranking coming out?
I tend to update them on Mondays after the weekend because we get to see the full series. But certainly in time for you to make your free agent pickups on the Monday before those lineups lock, since Patriots Day is now behind us.
Indeed. Thank you, of course, to Kyle Sabi for doing great work of the research. Keith Lipscomb, our editorial watchdog fill-in for the day. And Anthony Kaladiud for pressing all the buttons behind the glass. Anthony, we're not Monday with the holiday. We are off, of course. So our next show?
Thursday.
Thursday, indeed. We will see you back right here then. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and enjoy your holiday weekend.
Everything is awesome.
Darkness.
Science.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.